APAN reminds us that we mark 1,000 days of the ongoing Zionist genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. Despite the so-called ceasefire agreement, Israel continues its settler colonial project, expanding its military occupation to over 80% of Gaza, with Finance Minister calling to complete the conquest of the Gaza Strip and establish three new illegal Israeli settlements in northern Gaza. In the illegally occupied West Bank, Israeli forces bulldozed at least 500 olive trees in Zubaba, Jenin, only days after setting fire to olive groves in Ramana. These attacks are part of an ongoing campaign aimed at displacing Palestinian farmers, erasing Palestinian heritage and identity, and tightening control around colonial outposts. But there's been some movement in regards to people who have left Australia, Zionists who've left Australia to join the IOF, the Australian Centre for International Justice, the ACIJ, handed a 61-page brief to the Australian Federal Police detailing alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by an Australian citizen serving in the Israeli occupation forces in 2023-24. The AFP is assessing the allegations. Up to 1,000 Australian citizens have served in the Israeli occupation forces since October 2023. And despite the Israeli army's advice about how they can infiltrate and disguise their presence in a foreign army when they come back, I suppose the general population of Australia should be a bit scared.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Especially, we were watching at our house last night. We were watching a documentary on Cuba, and about a couple of Australians that took part in the flotilla that went from Mexico to Cuba to deliver life saving aid, and it was quite stark how even America was labeling that operation. They labeled it, just while you were saying about the sort of effect on the ground that the Zionist army's having, they were labeling it the total extermination campaign across all the drug cartel, so-called drug cartel boats, and across the Cuban people. And you know, this documentary showed the effect on the people. That was, you know, hospital services completely racked with power outages or insufficient medicine or
well,
even
I was thinking about Venezuela and its the effects of the earthquakes, devastating earthquakes in the past. Cuban doctors and medical aid would go immediately to that site. But of course, under the present conditions, they're going to have to rely on their US overlords. And we've seen how the US overlords assist their own people when they have disasters. So with the flooding in Texas, what happened in New Orleans when there was devastating floods, horrendous, horrendous.
Well, that's exactly right. And the US have used this as a pretense, this environmental disaster as a pretense to continue their move on in to sequester more aspects of Venezuelan political and civil life, now filling up more humanitarian, you know, aid roles and stuff like that, but in effect taking more control of the company and of the country.
Yeah, that was the Freudian slip.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, they are taking control of the companies, the oil ones.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, countries as companies.
Yeah, well, in this, we saw that in this doco last night, we saw that Haiti gets 75% of its doctors from Cuba, and that since America's attacks on Venezuela,
yeah,
and they've pulled all the doctors out of Haiti. So
yeah, Haiti is an ongoing disaster created by if you go back and watch Anthony Lowenstein's Disaster Capitalism film, there's a whole section around what's going on in Haiti, the collapse of the Haiti civil society over generations. It's like this enormous payback to the Haitians for having the temerity to
overthrow their slave lords.
Their slave overlords in the 18th or the 19th century, right? It's like the American. It's like John Howard. He had a long memory. Yeah. He remembered his enemies and then sent out the feelers to get rid of them decades after he felt this smart. But anyway, there was a glimmer of positivity here locally. The Police Accountability Project reports that Jordan Brown's legal win as the lead plaintiff in the class action over unlawful use of capsicum spray by Victorian police at IMARC protests in Melbourne in 2019, it was a success. And Jordan spent 6 years fighting for justice, 6 years. Police Accountability Project Director of Policy and Advocacy Michelle Reynolds presented Jordan with the Victorian Civil Justice Award from the Australian Lawyers Alliance, which he had accepted for him in May. So that you may not have realised that actually happened, that people fight back on a continuous basis with a focus. You may also have been at the IMAC event in 2019. It's really funny because I was at the event, so it's an interesting thing to realise that there's an anchor in the future of slowly but surely saying that the militarisation of the police using public money to attack the people who are paying for it, like paying for our own subjugation, is an issue, and that people are, it's not an inevitability, it's something that has to be fought.
Yeah, we've seen that. We reported on a similar case in Italy when there was an activist at a rally that was shot at eye level with tear gas canister and lost her eye. So that prompted a whole campaign that's then now ended up in the courts and has found, one of the constitutional courts has found that the police have been using without authorization and in dangerous ways tear gas canisters and sort of riot stuff that still hasn't led to any convictions, but
It can't be let go. It can't be allowed. I know it's incredibly the parallel universes of the incredibly slow legal process versus the terrible effects on people at the moment that it happens. But it's something to be taken into account. Our friend Matthew's not here this morning because he's unwell. We send you our best wishes, Matthew. But he did a lot of gathering of information around AI. And one of them in particular was Music Victoria had put out information, has set up a system where musicians can check to see if their work is being used, scraped, by the oligarchs, effectively, for their own ends to create AI music, which is an oxymoron, of course, because music is are the tears of culture from humans, not the tears of culture from machines.
Well, yeah, when it's increasingly been used to train algorithms, which then produce music that then goes on to get sold to advertisers or to other commercial ends, and these are the end products of these AI scraping algorithms.
Well, many of them have been very shocked to discover what has happened to their music, and there was a recent Instagram post by Arts Australia around the same theme, where software has been used to create music for these musicals that have become economically exciting for the last decade or so when they stopped. But now what they're doing is using software to reduce the amount of people they need to be in the orchestra pit. So as they say it, if you think you're going to see a musical because you're celebrating the live emotions of a live event, you should be thinking twice about what's actually going on in regards to the use of AI to reduce the amount of musicians who are being paid for their work.
Yeah, that's right. And that's another in the raft of neoliberal policies that's being pushed on the sides. But one of the more glaring elements of this is the NDIS cuts. I just wanted to bring it back to a Red Ant article that they wrote in April 30th, just briefly, because I think they outline pretty perfectly why this is happening. So they say that the government is cutting $35 billion from the NDIS, and it's not just a misallocation of funds that's the problem. Even if finding $53 billion for missiles is a clear demonstration of where priorities lie, the NDIS has never actually been about care. Instead, it's been a cash cow for private providers. While being marketed as a national insurance scheme right from the start, the NDIS was designed explicitly along neoliberal lines to privatise disability services. And they take a quote out of the NDIS market approach statement of opportunity and intent, saying, quote, "The National Disability Insurance Scheme is a transformational approach to disability support and services that is creating a radically new disability marketplace, a fundamental shift disrupting existing operating models from a welfare to a market-based system where people with disabilities can choose their supports through individualized commissioning." I just wanted to highlight that because...
The language, yeah.
But even in the doco where we were watching about Cuba last night, which was on YouTube, you can look it up. The channel's called Boy Boy, two Australian content creators that go around doing kind of publicity stunts, but then ram it full of political content in the middle of that. They highlight some of the healthcare system, how it works in Cuba. And we saw that, like... the doctors, not only do they have regular checkups with their patients, but also it's mandatory for them to go out to the house, to the patient's house, every 2 weeks and check out how they're living, because they say there's a, you know, the psychological is a connection to the biological, and maybe there's a biological connection to the psychological, and just a completely different thing. Even
you mean it's possible?
It is possible, yeah.
Oh my God!
Under blockade,
is it possible?
Under,
it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, to have a proper holistic health system. If we look at governments and money and large pots of it, and the idea that the government in their suits and their, you know, nice hairdos, etc., are doing the right thing, there was a rather disturbing thing coming out of Deep Cut, taxpayer-funded Australian sugar industry linked to abuses in West Papua. Sugar Research Australia developed a sugarcane variety to grow in West Papua. Months later, the UN accused Indonesian companies of displacing Indonesian people, indigenous people, to make way for sugarcane production. So the connection between our public money for a cash crop and West Papua and the death of West Papuans is that close.
Yeah, exactly. And these are the neo-colonial practices that Australia's engaging with when we saw the pretty unilateral military.
Are we being too emotional?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
We have to move on. You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Tobiah. And, it's important that you fight the good fight.